Free Falling.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Where, oh, where is the bottom of the housing market? No idea. A report out this morning says home prices fell off a cliff in the second quarter, an unprecedented 15% drop in the Case-Shiller Index. In a few minutes, we'll find out how new homes sold in July, expecting another decline, the eighth in 9 months. But the dollar may have seen the bottom and is crawling back up. It gained some value today, which brought down the price of oil a little more. It seems overseas investors have turned their attention from the U.S. economy to what's going on in their own backyards. Let's talk to our European correspondent, Stephen Beard. Stephen, what's the story here?
It seems that the major concern is the Eurozone economy, which is depressing the euro against the dollar. A survey of German business sentiment out today, much lower than expected. It's at a three-year low. And this does confirm the trend that we've seen recently and some figures that indicated that in the second quarter, the German economy fell by a half of 1%, and the Eurozone economy as a whole fell by 2.2%. So with all its problems, the US economy actually is still growing. That doesn't seem to be the case here in Europe.
What about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all the other things that people are fretting about here?
Well, indeed, it just simply seems that the view is here that, relatively speaking, the Eurozone could be hit even harder than the US in the downturn. And one other little factor that appears to be buoying some of the strength beneath the dollar today, remarks by the investment guru Warren Buffett, him saying that he's not taking any bets against the dollar. That's given currency traders here an idea that maybe the dollar is the currency to buy.
Wow, what a turn of events. All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
Stocks in London are having a bit of a tough day. They're down 1.5% so far. On Wall Street, mixed so far. The Dow is down just 7 points to 11,378. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 have both gained a couple so far. The markets in Asia closed about 1% lower. Last night, the Gigante chain of Latino grocery stores shut its doors. Then this morning, they opened as El Super. El Super now has 16 stores in California and Arizona. This merger is a sign of things to come in the Latino market. From our America's desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more.
If Hispanic immigrants in the U.S. wanted a taste of home, they once had to go to the corner bodega. Now they can get tortillas at Walmart. Harry Balzer is with the NPD Group, a firm that tracks how Americans eat.
The industry in itself is not a fast-growing industry. So anytime you find growth, and clearly Hispanics have been one of the fastest-growing segments of the food industry, you'll find a lot of people interested of all sizes.
The Latino food and beverage market in the U.S. is expected to grow to $8.4 billion by 2011. That's a 47% jump from 2006. Balzer says many recent immigrants prefer the look and feel of an ethnic grocery store. But research shows their children are often drawn to mainstream supermarkets.
As you spend more time in America, you all of a sudden start eating ham sandwiches and hot dogs and hamburgers.
To stay competitive, Latino grocery chains like El Super now have to carry apple pie. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, August 26th on Marketplace.org. People who live in Alaska are voting today. One measure on the ballot would limit pollution from mining operations so it wouldn't threaten salmon fisheries. But some people say this is really about trying to stop the construction of a huge copper and gold mine. Emily Schwing reports from Homer, Alaska.
The proposed mine would be located at the headwaters of Bristol Bay, home to the largest salmon run in the world. The Bay supplies more than half of the sockeye salmon to the global market and brings $126 million to the Alaskan economy each year. Katie Bursch has been fishing there for over 20 years.
Yeah, as far as balancing the net economics, really all you have to know is a mine is a non-renewable resource. They go in and get the minerals, and then it's done. It's gone, and you deal with the pollution.
John Shively is the CEO of the Pebble Mines Partnership Group. He says the statewide ballot initiative was drafted to specifically target his mine, and that's unconstitutional.
The proposal has been promoted as a way to stop the Pebble mine. If it can shut down Pebble, it can obviously stop or shut down other mines.
And any shutdown is a big concern in a state with a $4 billion mining industry. In Homer, Alaska, I'm Emily Schwing for Marketplace.
Now for a medical marvel. People with spinal cord injuries often lose their ability to move and to speak. Scientists have developed a new computer that allows people to use just their tongues to communicate. Janet Babin reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
Swish your tongue around your mouth for a second. It's a pretty flexible muscle, and it's directly connected to your brain through a cranial nerve, so it's not usually hurt during a spinal cord injury. Georgia Tech researchers say that's why it's the basis of their new communication system. The tongue gets pierced with a tiny magnetic tracer. Sensors then pick up tongue movements, send a signal to a laptop, and presto, you've turned your tongue into a computer joystick. Georgia Tech professor Maysam Govanlu says the tongue can control all sorts of objects for the disabled.
They can drive their wheelchair by just moving their tongue. There are many other applications such as turning the lights on and off, a phone, a powered bed, a TV, anything you can think of.
Startup funding came from foundations, but Govanlu says he's just received offers from private companies interested in licensing the technology. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
I talked about plummeting home prices at the beginning of this podcast. Of course, there's a flip side to everything. Since building is down, that means less land is being developed. That's good for the environment and for one kind of investor. Jennifer Collins has that story.
Will Rogers finds undeveloped land and tries to keep it that way. He runs the conservation group, the Trust for Public Land. And lately, his job has gotten a lot easier.
The current situation where values are dropping really is providing opportunities to acquire land for conservation that would otherwise be developed.
Rogers Group and others like his tend to have a lot of cash on hand, so they're able to buy land outright or secure better financing than private developers who rely on credit. Rogers says since last fall, his organization has preserved 1,000 acres all over the country. That land would have otherwise been destined for development, but because real estate deals are less profitable these days, the trust can buy up land and turn it into parks or open space.
We sometimes refer to this as the green lining in the dark cloud of the real estate meltdown.
Take an 850-acre swath of oceanfront property on the Hawaiian island of Oahu. The beach was about to become home to 1,000 condos and a sprawling hotel. But thanks to falling property values, the developer's financing fell through. The trust is now working to make sure the land stays just like this. Set aside as habitat for green sea turtles and endangered monk seals. Other groups are taking advantage of the falling property values as well. The Nature Conservancy and the Land Trust Alliance also report they're able to secure better deals now that the real estate bubble has burst. These groups are there to help more than just turtles and seals. Real estate brokers like Ryan Flegel say houses near open space are more valuable than those in the concrete jungle.
Everybody loves being near a park or near some wilderness. So if somebody else is paying for that and they don't have to, that's all the more benefit on their property value.
Location, location, location. In fact, Flegel and his girlfriend just closed on a house near a couple of parks in Southern California. He says they plan to remodel, and thanks to the green space, he believes they'll be in a better position to sell when the markets are singing again. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The school bells will be ringing soon. if they're not already where you are. But so far, the back-to-school shopping season doesn't have cash registers ringing much. Nancy Fargali has this story.
As you know, in fashion, I'll let Heidi Klum of Project Runway finish.
One day you're in, and the next day you're out.
Thanks, Heidi. Here's the bad news for retailers. A lot of them will be way out this shopping season. Most consumers say they're cutting back on back-to-school spending. Stacey Janiak is the head U.S. retail analyst for Deloitte.
The consumer mood that we see for back-to-school is just, you know, a struggle with just stretching the dollar.
And Janiak says the struggle will force kids to choose between the high end and the low end.
So if they want that pair of True Religion jeans, they'll get that, but then they're willing to forego multiple pairs of shoes and they're willing to shop at lower price stores.
Where you can get everything. Walmart and Target are expected to cash in because they sell clothes and school supplies. That means fewer trips in the car. But stores like American Eagle and JCPenney are also cutting prices on T-shirts, jeans, and other basics. Tracy Johnson is with her two daughters at a Los Angeles mall. Her clothing budget is $200, and her daughter Lisa knows her mom won't budge.
It sucks, because I really want it sometimes.
I love my daughters. I'm weak for them. But I have to think within price range, too. It's like it costs a lot of money for clothes. And
teens are onto that. Brandy Stansberry runs consumer focus groups for companies. She says now it's hip to hunt for bargains. Teens want to shop at discount stores.
The more things you can get, the better. I mean, it's fun to walk away with bags and bags of things.
But the back-to-school battle doesn't end there. No wardrobe is complete without the right tech accessory.
It's going to be cool to go back to school with the new iPhone or the new BlackBerry. So many teens have BlackBerries now and are pretty much running their social lives like Fortune 500 companies.
Well, without the golden parachute. I'm Nancy Fergali for Marketplace.
If you'd like to take the Marketplace Morning Report with you, you can do that with our podcast, which is online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.